Okay, so we're going to get started with Tehillim Tzadi Aleph. Yoshev b'seter elyon b'tzel shaddai yitlonan. That's a hard pasuk at the beginning. What I want to do first, because I'm exploring this a little bit more. I haven't had a chance to dig so deep, but we'll do a little more next week as well when we do our Purim Tehillim, is take a little look at how Chazal, specifically in the Gemara and the Midrashim, look at a parak of Tehillim. And whether they look at it the same way we do, whether they look at it differently. And I like this example because here we have a chapter that it seems pretty clearly from at least two Gemaras that we'll look at together is something that Chazal are reading as a unit. What I mean to say is they view the chapter as a full chapter and they read it structurally and broadly, as opposed to some other Midrashim where it looks like they're picking up on like one pasuk or one word and kind of telling you a story about that. Here they're definitely reading a little bit broadly in these two examples. When I say next week, I think we'll find there are at least two Mizmorim that might be about Purim or allude to Purim in some ways, and we'll pick one of those and try to see how Chazal do that as well. So the two Gemaras here are the Gemara in Shavuot in source number two. We're actually going to start with the Gemaras before the Mizmor because as we read, I think we'll try building a different theory than the one Chazal are using for this chapter. So this is the Gemara in Shavuot. It's describing the process by which you could add to the city of Yerushalayim. This is a really fascinating halacha in and of itself, where let's say you have the city of Yerushalayim. Well, that city has a certain kind of sanctity to it, a certain kind of kedusha, with a lot of halachic ramifications about what things you're allowed to do there, not allowed to do there. You have to eat certain kinds of food only in Yerushalayim. And so sometimes, especially as population grows, you might need to expand the city, make it bigger so that more people can build there and live there and more can be done there.
So this is in our time as well, or is this only in the time of the Beit
HaMikdash? So that's a good question. Definitely the process as described, and I'm sorry I didn't bring the whole process, but the process as described is something that's happening with a king, with a Kohen Gadol, with the Aron, with different tools that we would use as part of the ceremony for expanding it. Nowadays, we've obviously expanded Yerushalayim as well, but for most purposes, we don't assume that we expanded the sanctity of Yerushalayim. So it's not like if you're in the new city somewhere, that let's say if you had Maaser Sheni, right, produce that has to be brought to Yerushalayim and eaten there, that you could eat it in the new city. We would assume you have to eat it in whatever was halachic Yerushalayim. We could even ask, well, what we call the old city, part of that is Ottoman. So is everything included, or how do we find exactly where the border is? So I think that would be the way we would think about it nowadays.
And it would be the same things that you can or can't eat there? Or?
So some of the rules are limited to, like, korbanot, for example. So there aren't special rules of kashrut in Yerushalayim, as far as I know. It's not like, you know, you could eat an animal shechted this way only in Tel Aviv and not in Yerushalayim. I don't know of any halacha like that. But there are various rules for things that depend on Yerushalayim. According to some opinions, lulav. So you know how we shake lulav a full 7 days of Sukkot? That is a zecher lemikdash. Really, the basic halacha is that you should only shake lulav on the first day of Sukkot, or maybe the first 2 days, and the rest of the days you don't, except if you're in either the Beit HaMikdash area itself or in Yerushalayim. So that would be one example of a halacha that depends on what area is defined as Yerushalayim. And so that's what this Gemara is concerned with, is describing the process by which you can expand the city. And there's a whole elaborate process here. We're only looking at one part, which is the part about song. With a song, I'll read from the English here. So among the things that you need are a song. The sages taught in a breita. They sing the song of thanksgiving, Mizmor Latoda, which we saw already earlier in the year, Psalms 100. Accompanied by harps, lyres, and cymbals at every corner and upon every large stone in Yerushalayim. So as you go, you're continually singing Mizmor Latoda, that's Psalms 100. And the also recited Perek Lamed, Aramimcha Hashem Kidi Litani Velusi Machta Oivaili, that's chapter 30. And what they call, and this is a really interesting name, Shir Shel Pigaim, V'yesh Omrim Shir Shel Nigaim, either the song of it translates here evil spirits. I'm not sure if it means to connote specifically like demonic spirits, or a pega could just be a like evil encounter. I might be referring to the spirits directly. Or a song of nigaim, meaning afflictions or plagues. So this is not a The name is not so optimistic, but the content, as we'll see, is very positive about these things. It's the song of being protected from these things. And it might make sense to sing the song of protection from danger when you're expanding the city. You know, we're going to build out the walls, we'll expand the scope of the city, and we're sort of setting a border around which we should be protected within the city. So the song is certainly appropriate for that. Why are they called these two things? We'll see these verses very shortly. If it's called Shir Shel Negaim, it's because of the pasuk V'nega lo yikrav ba'o halacha. And if you call it Shir Shel Pegaim, it's because of the pasuk Yipol mitzidcha elef. Those are ones we'll see shortly, so we won't have to get too deep into it. And it mentions here, as it continues, that you start from the beginning of the chapter, and you read only until pasuk tet. Yoshiv b'seter elyon b'zel shaday yedlonan ad until ki ata Hashem machsi elyon samt. Which is verse 9. We'll see later that I have a different theory for where verse 9 fits, but it reads it as a block. From 1 to 9 is this section of Tehillim that has this theme of protection from dangerous forces. And then from verse 10 onwards, we'll see there's a different theme. And this theme of protection is emphasized by the continuation of the Gemara that says Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi would say these verses before he would go to sleep, and he'd be protected from evil spirits, again, is what the translation here is assuming. But you'd be protected overnight by reciting these psukim. Hichi Avet Hachi, says the Gemara, how could he recite these verses to protect himself? V'ha'amar of Yeshua ben Levi, doesn't he also believe Asur lihitrapo b'divrei Torah, that you can't use words of Torah as a healing force or as a medical force? You can't use them as a special incantation to give people health? So how could he use them to protect himself? The Gemara concludes, and this is the last sentence here at the very end, Lahagin Sha'ani, to protect oneself is different. So you're allowed to use the words of Tehillim, or these words of Tehillim at least, for protection, but you can't use them for healing. So if you're sick, reciting Tehillim, or reciting words of Torah as a form of, as a way to heal yourself is inappropriate, but reciting them to protect yourself from danger is appropriate. Now, how does this fit with the idea of like reciting Tehillim for Refuah Shlema? This is kind of a difficult idea. This isn't the time to do that topic in depth, but one suggestion that I think appears in the Sefer HaChinuch, if I'm not mistaken, so a fairly early Rishon, is that there's a difference between using the words of Torah in a kind of magical sense, right? Reciting them as though they're an incantation in the hopes that, you know, healing will arrive, and using them as a prayer. You're allowed to daven for someone to heal. No one says that's a terrible thing. So if you use the words as a prayer, that might be more appropriate. You might also be able to distinguish between reciting the words and studying them. So the difference between my reciting a magical incantation, my actually paying attention to what I'm saying and learning, and by learning and by improving my character, I may come to a point where I deserve more health. But that's just, it's good to know in the context of Tehillim in general that there's this limitation, right? We should be careful, even when we recite Tehillim in a group, in a Tehillim group, or as a tefillah, as we do very often, not to use it in the sort of magical way that some people might understand Tehillim, but instead in the prayerful context. It's nice to see that. But in any case, we see that this chapter being used in the sense of protection, protection from danger, protection from harm, and specifically the beginning of the chapter. This other Gemara in Sanhedrin is even a little bit more evocative as to the structure of the chapter. I think it disagrees very slightly with what the earlier Gemara said, but it has the same broad dividing line. We'll skip the first section only in the interest of time, but just note that the beginning section says until it describes the meaning of Pasuk Yud, which we won't deal with right now because it's too far afield, and then jump to the second paragraph here. Until this point in the psalm, until verse 10, Solomon's father, David, blessed him. Apparently, this is a bracha from David, or soon we'll see his mother, Bathsheba, as well, blessing Shlomo, a father and son discussion. So up until Pasuk Yud is David's blessing. From this point forward, his mother blessed him, as these blessings are more appropriate from a mother as opposed to from a father. And we'll see that the blessings in the psalm do shift theme a little bit from the beginning to the end. For he shall order his angels to preserve you in all your ways. They shall bear you on their hands. You shall tread upon the lion and the adder, the young lion, and the crocodile you shall trample underfoot. So these verses of protection are perhaps more maternal, as the Gemara describes it. They're more about the protection and just kind of being safe and cared for fully in your life. And then up until this point, up until verse 13, his mother blessed him, and from this point forward, God actually blesses him. We'll see the very end of the Mizmor shifts from a human-to-human discussion to a God-to-human discussion. And we'll see that as we get to the end of the Mizmor. So this is one example, which for me was very enlightening, of how the Gemara, or how Chazal seem to understand a Mizmor as a unit structurally, and break it up into different structural units. I'm very interested in that, but a lot of the Midrashim I had seen so far had not really been interested in that motif. Now we have to look at the Mizmor on our own, and I think offer a slightly different division, but one that draws on some of the themes of what we've seen. So we'll start from the beginning, and we'll see. Trying to think if I should start by outlining the structure or start by reading, and we'll see where it leads us. Let's start from the beginning and kind of note things as we go. So Yoshev b'seter elyon b'tzel Shaddai Yitlonan. It's a bit of an ambiguous pasuk, right? Sits in secrecy elyon, the lofty one, the most high one. B'tzel in shadows, Shaddai, Shakai, name for Hashem, Yitlonan, dwells or rests. So it's unclear is that how to sort of punctuate that verse. Is the verse supposed to be Yoshev b'seter Elyon, the Elyon, Hashem, dwells in secret, and Bitzel, and in shadow, Shakai Yitlonan, Hashem, lives? Or is it meant to be read referring to a person? The person who is Yoshev B'Seter Elyon, if you sit in the secrecy of Hashem, you will dwell in his shadow. And that's a very good thing, describing a person. It's a little bit unclear if we're describing Hashem, though I think that probably will work a little bit better for the interpretation I'm going to suggest for the chapter. You also get the sense here that Hashem is distant. These are words that are describing Hashem in a less immediate and more removed context. He is in secrecy. He is in shadow. He is Elyon, meaning he is lofty and above us. Even the name Shakai is not usually a name associated with personal connection and relationship with Hashem. That shifts a little bit already when you get to the second pasuk. Omar Hashem, I will say Hashem. So there's a, not a narrator, but a character here who's speaking. I will say to Hashem, Machsi, you are my refuge, umtudati, and my safety, my mitudah, my fortress. Elokai eftach bo. Hashem, I will say to Hashem that he is my God, he is Elokai, and I will trust in him. As a first-person statement, right? So whatever Pasuk Aleph is doing, by Pasuk Bet, you're dealing with a first person, he is saying, I trust in Hashem. And the interesting thing is that when you move already to the next Pasuk, you see a shift in person, just grammatically speaking. And all of a sudden, it is in the second person. Ki hu yatzilcha mipach yakush midever havot. Because he, Hashem, will save you from a trap, from a snare, and from this dever, from this sickness. This is one reason it might be an appropriate mizmor for someone who's sick, or pigaim, as we mentioned, afflictions of various kinds. And this tense, the second person tense, will continue from Pasuk Gimel all the way to Pasuk Chet, from 3 to 8. It's all going to be in second person, describing to someone how Hashem is constantly a protective force. That's interesting. So we'll just note that shift, and we'll see if we can make meaning of it in a little bit. Be'evrato yasech lach, Hashem under his feathers or his wings, he will cover you. V'tachat kenafav techaseh, he will hide you. You will dwell under his wings. Tzina v'sochera amito, his truth is a shield and a sochera. Sochera is something that surrounds you and protects you, maybe like a kind of armor. Lo tira mi pachad laila mi chetia uf yomam. You will not fear from the fear of the night, from a arrow that could fly at you during the day. Mi dever ba'ofel yahaloch, from dever, again, that word appears, the pestilence that walks in darkness, another synonym, ofel, for darkness. Mi ketev yashum saharayim, that's a very difficult pasuk, but we can translate for now just as some destructive force that comes during the day. So there are destructive forces at day and at night that are mentioned in these two psukim, and Hashem protects you from all of them. All these unexpected, dangerous things that you can't really anticipate and that you're constantly fearful of, right? Pachad Laila, certainly. An arrow comes, it's very hard to protect yourself from that. But you get the sense that Hashem is protecting you from that and from fear. You should not be worried about these dangers. Yipol mitzidcha elef urvava miminecha ve'elecha lo yigash. 1,000 will fall from one side and 10,000 from another. from your left hand, from your right hand, but to you they won't reach. Meaning, even if people around you are being hurt and afflicted, even if thousands or tens of thousands are, you will certainly not even be touched by whatever dangerous force is hurting them. I think when I don't read this mizmor carefully, I sometimes assume that's talking about Hashem. This is a mistake. I don't think this is the right way to read the pasuk, but I sometimes think, oh, Hashem, you're so powerful, you could cause thousands or tens of thousands of people to be killed, and no one could reach you, no one could fight back. But that's incorrect. Really, I think the verse is talking about the one who trusts Hashem, and he is kind of protected even if everyone around him is in danger. Rak be'einecha tabit v'shilumat v'sha'im tira. Just look with your eyes, and you'll see that the wicked get their comeuppance, their payback, shilumat, their get their due is probably the right way to translate it. And so in this stretch of Pesukim, from 3 to 8, from Gimel to Chet, we have a sort of very extensive description of Hashem as a protective force. You stay still, don't do anything. Hashem will come to you, Hashem will surround you and protect you from danger, from illness, from fear. And from your protected perch under his wings, you will see that the wicked will be punished and you don't really have to do anything. That seems to be this next section. And the reason I think the section ends here is because in Pasuk Tet, we seem to kind of circle back to the beginning again. We shift to talking about Hashem. We're not talking to a person anymore. Hey, you're going to be safe. We switch to talking about Hashem. Ata Hashem, you Hashem, are Machsi and Elyon. We already mentioned also in Pesukim Aleph and Bet. Before we said, I will say to Hashem, you are my refuge. And now, again, Hashem, you are my refuge. Elyon, samtem me'onecha, you have placed your ma'on, your dwelling, on a high place. But we said Elyon before. So it seems like we're circling back and repeating ourselves. It's also worth noting we're now at the middle point in the chapter. The midpoint in terms of the number of words, and the midpoint in terms of the number of psukim. So multiple reasons to think that we're kind of circling back to the beginning a little bit. And that's interesting, that we're circling back to the beginning. Immediately after this pasuk, we shift back from the just talking, a person speaking to Hashem, to a person speaking to another person. Lo tu'une elecha, it won't happen to you, ra'a. No evil will happen to you. V'nega lo yikrav ba'olecha, and no plague will come into your tent. Ki malachav yetzav alach lishom racha b'chol drachecha. Because his angels will be commanded regarding you to protect you in all of your ways. So as you're going about your business, the angels will protect you. Al kapayim yisa'uncha, they will carry you on their hands, so to speak. They'll, lift you up. Pentigof be'erven raglacha. Lest you stub your toe. You'll walk and you'll step on a rock, or you'll stub your toe on something. That won't happen to you. The angels will protect you. And if you are walking on the ground, you'll be protected as well. Al shachal vafet en tidroch. Those are two synonyms for snakes. Sorry, that's not the case. Petin and tanin are both snakes. Shachal is one word for lion. There are other words for lion. So you'll trample on the lions and on the snakes and crush the other lions, the young lions, and tanin, other kinds of snakes and serpents. So all these dangerous creatures, you'll be able to trample all over them. I think this is the end of the section where we're talking again in the second person. So this, the interpretation I'd like to suggest, this was partially inspired by Elchanan Sam and partially by Benny Gesundheit to important scholars on Tehillim, is that the way to read this chapter is as a dialogue. Right? The reason you could think of it as a dialogue is, first of all, you have this shift in tense, so that makes you think it's a conversation. It would be great if they said, oh, and then this character speaks, but a poem has a hard time doing that. But if you just present the shifting tense and the shifting themes, you're kind of meant to pick up on that distinction. This is most noticeable, not in Tehillim, but in Shir HaShirim, where you have the Dod, the Raya, the two lovers, and it seems like they're talking to each other, but at no point does it say, and then the Dod said, blah, 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 and then the Raya said, such and such.
You have to pay much more attention.
Exactly, so you have to pay a lot more attention to notice, but you do get the sense this is a dialogue. So what is the dialogue? Well, let's take a look from the beginning. A person starts off the dialogue. Let's get Pasuk Aleph, because it's a little bit hard to tell if that's the person talking or if it's a description of the person. I will say to Hashem, you are my refuge, and I will trust you. Right? This is a person saying, I'm going to trust Hashem, I'm committing to this. And then for the next six psukim, someone else is responding. And someone else is telling them, you should know, actually, you want to trust in Hashem? Good, Hashem is a reliable, trustworthy place to put your trust. He will protect you, you don't have to worry. This is what bitachon, he said, evtachbo. This is what bitachon is. You realize that Hashem is constantly there to protect you from danger. And then we circle back to Pasuk Tet, and he repeats himself almost, right? You, Hashem, are my refuge. You've placed your dwelling on high. We said before Hashem was on high, your dwelling is on high. If it's a dialogue, we'd like to think something changed from the beginning to now. Is he just repeating himself? I think there's at least one notable difference between Pasuk Tet and Pasuk Bet. Pasuk Bet, he's aspiring. I would love to say to Hashem, Omar is a future tense, I will say to Hashem in the future, you are my refuge. I would love to have proper faith in Hashem. Then he was taught some things about Hashem. You should know Hashem protects you from all of these kinds of hidden dangers. And by Pasuk Tet, it changes. Now he's talking not about Hashem, but to Hashem. And he's saying, Hashem, you are my refuge. Not, I would like to say that you are my refuge, but you are my refuge and I can trust you. So his trust in Hashem has increased a little bit in the context of this conversation. What did he learn in between? So he learned about Hashem's nature as a protective force. He learned a little bit that Hashem and Pasuk Chet, that Hashem will punish the wicked and that he won't be punished, but he'll be protected from those kinds of punishment. And he learns, I think, not to be afraid. Lo tirami pachad laila. Don't be afraid of the fear of the night. He's being taught to trust Hashem. To an extent, you also wonder, is he being taught about the dangers as well? Meaning, if this is a person who doesn't yet trust Hashem, and is, I'm going to trust Hashem. So it's easy to trust Hashem if you're not aware that the world is a scary, dangerous place. It's a little bit harder to trust Hashem when you realize that everything's incredibly terrifying. So maybe the educator here, who's responding to this person, says, oh, you should know the world is dangerous. There are lots of dangers around, but as you learn about the dangers, I'm also going to teach you at the same time that you could trust Hashem to protect you from those dangers. So you should know there are plagues out there, there are traps for you, and Hashem is constantly covering you with his wings.
We believe that Hashem is bringing those plagues as well. So how do you balance that?
So we do, right? That would be more, in a Tanakh context, that would be more of an Eov topic, right? Why is Hashem bringing evil into the world at all? In the world of Tehillim, I think we don't think that way. In the world of Tehillim, we know that Hashem does good for the righteous and bad for the wicked, and even if it looks like that temporarily is not the case, broadly speaking, that is. And yeah, Hashem is bringing plagues, but you know what? Even though 1,000 will die to your side and 10,000 from your right hand, the plague won't get you because you're trusting in Hashem and Hashem will protect you. That's the mindset of Tehillim. It builds this idea of bitachon. I don't think that means that you can't ask the question that you ask, which is a very appropriate question, but you have to figure out the genre of what we're reading.
But I think it's part of the bitachon is knowing that everything comes from Hashem, both good and bad, and you know we have to accept both sides and realize that if we daven, that Hashem will bring us the good.
So that's interesting, that part of bitachon is accepting that there are bad things and saying, even if bad things do happen to me, that's okay. That is still from Hashem. So philosophically, I agree with you, but I'm not sure I see that in this chapter. I don't see any recognition that you will be afflicted by these bad things. In fact, as we get to the next sort of speech from the, you know, we'll call them the teacher of this mizmor, you get the sense that Hashem is protecting you even more than we mentioned already. Not only will we protect you from any force that could come about you, but you could walk about the world, and if there are lions, we'll just trample right over them. And you won't even stub your toe because you're being protected by the angels of Hashem. So that kind of confidence that's being presented here doesn't seem to acknowledge that reality. Not because I don't think it's not true, but because that's not what this particular mizmor is about or is trying to teach. So let's take a look. Let's jump into that right now in Pasuk Yud, let's say. So we see how the student has learned, I'm now more connected to Hashem, I've learned about Hashem's ways a little bit more, so I'm more confident when I say, Ata Hashem Machsi, you are my refuge. Another teacher comes back and he says, nothing bad will happen to you. Lo tu'nei lecha ra. The nega lo yikrab ba'olecha. Not only do you not need to fear these things, they're not even going to get close to you. Because Hashem's angels will come and they'll protect you. And this is the point of activity that I was mentioning before. You, it's not that you're being, you know, covered like a mother bird covering with its wings, which is how it was described before. When a mother bird does that, it can't fly. But it's, you are able to go on your way, walk about the world, accomplish things, and as you do that, don't worry about dangers. There are some interpretations of this chapter that read it as a chapter for travelers, specifically, because a lot of the dangers that are mentioned here are ones that you would encounter more as you're traveling and less as you're staying at home. And certainly, you're being carried by the angels, lest your leg stumble on a rock or be hurt. You'll trample over all the wild animals on the road, and you get the sense that you're far above where you were before. Before, you're being protected passively. Here, you're able to actively progress into the world, and you're still being protected fully by Hashem. And this is an extra level of your education. You don't have to be protected by hiding. You can be protected even in your active, moving kind of state. There's some resonances here, which we don't have time to explore, to Yaakov in that last section in particular. So we have ideas of Yaakov being protected by angels. The angels go up and down. And then when he returns to Eretz Yisrael, he encounters a camp of Malachei Elohim. The idea of Yaakov and an Evan is a sort of resonant theme. So there might be a reason to read this chapter in light of Yaakov and Beit El, but not something we're going to see now. So we get to the end of the Mizmor now, and we've seen this dialogue, you know, this sort of eager, ambitious student who wants to connect to Hashem, and the old, you know, I'm assuming older mentor, but it doesn't have to be older, it could even be just supporting friends who confirm his bitachon and support him in developing his faith in Hashem. You actually are, you're right about Hashem, I could teach you how to have proper bitachon. And finally, Hashem actually talks. Ki vish chashak. He set his desire upon me. So that's not a person talking to another person, that's Hashem talking, saying, this person has trusted in me properly, so therefore, va'afalteyu, I will deliver him, I will save him. Asag vehu, I will set him up on high, ki yadashmi, because he knew my name. Which is also interesting. At the beginning, we talked a lot about names of Hashem. Elyon, Shakai, Hashem. Well, you understood my name, and specifically the aspect of Hashem that involves protecting you. Since you understand that and connect to that, I will protect you as well. Yikra'ehi ve'enehu, if he calls out to me, I will answer. Imo anochi v'tzara, I am with him in dangerous places. We mentioned already danger has already come here, so I am with you in dangers. Achaletzehu, I will rescue him. V'achabdehu, and I will honor him. So it's not only the what you might call the negative, or the sur meira, the being protected from evil and protected from danger, you even get uplifted by bitachon. Faith in God isn't only about protection. It's also about your dignity and your honor. Orech emim aspiehu, and your life. You will have long days. You will be sated by Hashem. Or Hashem says, I will sate him and satisfy him. Va'arehu vishuati, and I will show him my salvation. Before, Hashem just showed him the destruction of the wicked, so that's fine. The wicked will be destroyed and you'll be safe. But it's not only that you'll be at the same level while the wicked are punished, you'll be at the same level and then uplifted in some way. Your bitachon brings you closer to Hashem. It's not only a minimal level of protection, it's also a higher level of connection. And that connection is manifest when Hashem protects you, but it's also manifest when Hashem brings you angelic support in all of your ways and when you properly connect to Him with the proper bitachon. So this progression in the Mizmor, it's some scholars call this a dramatic Mizmor. It's literally enacting a drama, a story, kind of implicit in the text. Sort of shows the development of the boteach, the young person who's trying to develop in their bitachon. I happen to like this a lot because if this reading is correct, and I find it very persuasive, right, grammatically and thematically to see these shifts. So if it's persuasive, then a person can find themselves at different points of the Mizmor. If it's a chronology as opposed to a single point in time, right? When you see Mizmor Latoda, it's much easier to see it as, I'm being grateful right now. You're already at a point where you recognize Hashem and you feel immense gratitude to Him. This Mizmor is chronological. So you could start at a point where you want to see Hashem as someone you trust. And then you need to be reminded about all the dangers of the world, how Hashem constantly protects you from those. And, you know, thank God, you know, many of us are really safe from a lot of the things that make the world very dangerous. and build up our bitachon kind of in the progression of the mizmor. So if you feel like right now you are in a pasuk bet place, that's fine, right? You're at the beginning of your journey, and you move on, and the more you learn about the world, the closer you can get towards the end of the mizmor, and really appreciating Oreh Chaimim Asbiehu Varehu Bishuati, which is how the mizmor kind of brings you to your educational conclusion when you fully learn and internalize your sense of bitachon. So with that, we'll end.